different issues of chronology in Chumash Bereishis, I just want to mention a very, very important calculation that Rashi makes. It's really from a Gemara in Megillah. And Rashi alludes to it at the end of Parshas Chayesara, but he elaborates on it in Toldos. It's very, very complicated chronology. The bottom line, I'm going to give you the bottom line, then we'll try to retrace some of the steps. The bottom line is that we know, if you look at the whole Chumash Bereishis, that Yosef was separated from his father for 22 years. Yosef was sold into slavery, we're getting ahead of ourselves a little bit, at the age of 17. And he stood before Paro and became the second to the king because he interpreted Paro's dreams at the age of 30. So that's 13 years, right? 17 to 30. And then you had the 7 years of famine. I'm sorry, the 7 years of plenty. And Yaakov came after the 2 years of famine. So, and it says that Yosef was 30 and Yaakov came 9 years later. So Yaakov came from at the age of 39. So Yosef was separated from Yaakov from age 17. I'm sorry, from Yosef being 17 to age 39. Right, everyone understands that, Cheshbon? Because again, the Torah itself says, Beferish, Yosef was sold when he was 17. Okay, we know that. The Torah says, Beferish, he was omeid bifnei paro to interpret the dreams at the age of 30. That's in the Chumash. We then know there were 7 years of famine. So after the 7 years of, I'm sorry, there were 7 years of plenty. So after the 7 years of plenty, Yosef is now 37. We know that Yaakov came after 2 years of famine, because Yaakov tells Paro there's another 5 years of famine left. And actually they were canceled when Yaakov came. So you have 17 to 30, which is 13 years. You then have 7 years of plenty, which is 20 years. And then you have 2 years of famine, which is 22 years. So Yosef and Yaakov were separated for 22 years, right? You know that. Now, Chazal say that the reason why Yaakov was punished, so to speak, that Yosef was separated for 22 years, is because for 22 years, Yaakov was not fulfilling the mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em with his father Yitzchak. And Mida Keneged Mida, since Yaakov did not show proper honor, because he wasn't there, to his father for 22 years, Yosef was separated for 22 years. Now, how do you get the 22 years for Yaakov? So the way we get it is that Yaakov runs away to Laban's house, and basically Yaakov works for to marry Rachel for 7 years. When he gets the wrong wife, he works another 7 years. That's 14 years. In addition, he worked 6 more years after he was married to Rachel and Leah to build up his own income, so to speak. So that's a total of 20 years. And then we are told that it was another 2 years till he saw his father, both the traveling and for various reasons, we'll discuss it later, Yaakov was not able to be home. So it's 7, 7, 6, and 2. Okay, so the Gemara in Megillah says, Mida Keneged Mida, that because Yaakov did not honor his father for 22 years, Yosef was separated from Yaakov for 22 years. Now, the problem that the Gemara in Megillah has is that if you go through all of the numbers in great detail, you actually see that Yaakov was separated from Yitzchak from the time he ran away, not only 22 years, he was separated for 36 years. And that is, before he even went to Laban's house, he was learning in the yeshiva of Shem the Aver for 14 years. Now, if he was learning in the yeshiva of Shem the Aver for 14 years, and you add that to the 22 years, there were 36 years of absence, and not 22. So why was Yosef separated from his father for only 22 years? Right, the Gemara in Megillah answers that the years that Yaakov spent learning Torah are not considered violating Kibud Av V'Em, because Talmud Torah is even greater than the mitzvah of Kivud Aviim. And this is how the Gemara proves that Talmud Torah is greater than Kivud Aviim. Now, the whole Gemara is very, very difficult to understand, because how could you possibly say that Yaakov gets punished for not honoring his parents? His parents told him to leave. His parents said, leave, because Esav, your brother, wants to kill you and the like. So the answer is this. You have to understand that this is not in the nature of a punishment. There was no sin that Yaakov committed by leaving. But Lamaisa, he was not able to fulfill the mitzvah of Kibbutz Aviyim, and as a result, there was something missing in his spiritual portfolio. Now, sorry, just want to add a question there? Yeah.
So when he was with Laban, I mean, he was involved in getting married.
Yes.
So does that not count as a mitzvah also that reported him from...
So let's discuss this a little bit. In other words, this may be nogeya to some of you and the like. You know, there is, of course, a great mitzvah of Kibbutz Aviyim. There are two mitzvahs, right? We'll digress a little bit. In the Ten Commandments, it is honor your parents. And in Parshas Kedoshim, it is to revere your parents. Ish imo v'yaviv tiro. And the Gemara explains that kavod are things like giving them food and drink and spending time with them, taking them to the doctor appointments, or just calling them on the phone, which is an aspect of kavod. You show that you esteem and you care for them. Mora is more of the negative. You don't sit in their place. You don't call them by their first name. You know, in the 60s, there used to be a big thing. People would call their parents by the first name. Hi, George. You know, I don't like what Mary's doing. You know, whatever. Wait. So that's usher d'oraisa. You cannot call your parents by the first name. In fact, this was such a strong halacha in Klal Yisrael that even when people would name their children after their parents, they wouldn't call the children by the name of their parents, although that goes beyond the halacha. So you know the Yiddish expression for children? Bubula, mamala. Bubula means little grandmother. Mamala means little mother. These were reasons that if someone named their child after their deceased mother, they wouldn't call them Rachel, they would call them mamala, little mama. That's where it comes from. We use it interchangeably. Bubula and Takula, I know, but they had specific Zedala, etc. Just shows you the great reverence that. Now, of course, that's going beyond the halacha, because the prohibition is not, you know, if my father's name is Moshe, I'm not forbidden to talk to another Moshe. It's only, you know, I can't call my father Moshe. But the reverence went beyond the halacha that you didn't even call your child by your father's name directly or your mother's name directly. It was Mamala or Tatal. That's the origin of it. So we have Kavod, and we have Mora, and both of them are the Oraisa. There is a machlokas, the Rambam and the Tur. Is there a mitzvah of Kibbutz Aviyim for parents who are not halachically observant? But we paskin that if they're not intentionally violating the Torah, but it's simply that they lack the background, tinok shenishpa, we do paskin there is a mitzvah of Kibbutz Aviyim. But as you undoubtedly know over the years, the mitzvah of Kibbutz Aviyim never applies if your parents give you a commandment or a request to violate the Torah in any way. You still have to be respectful, but if they tell you drive on Shabbos or come wear on Shabbos or go eat in a non-kosher restaurant, there is absolutely no mitzvah of Kibbutz Aviyim, and indeed you're not allowed to violate the Torah because of the mitzvah of Kibbutz Aviyim. Now, this raises a lot of tricky things. Let's say your parents want you to come to a non-kosher restaurant because they're making a birthday for your grandmother. Now, for sure you can't eat non-kosher food there. That's obvious, even if your parents tell you, we want you to eat the shrimp. But if they just want you to be there, or if they're willing to have you there, you really cannot say automatically that it's forbidden for me to be there as long as I make it clear I'm not eating. So you have to ask a shaila. In other words, the law is fairly simple. Kibbutz Aviyim does not apply when you are being asked to do something that's an aveira. That's a very simple law. But whether something is an aveira can be very tricky. It's not always so simple. If they tell you to be mechalel Shabbos, if they tell you to eat treif, then indeed don't do it. Of course, it's tricky. Even if they tell you to give them treif, if they tell you, it's very interesting. Let's say your parents tell you to go shopping, right? And they give you a grocery shopping list, And that list involves non-kosher food. I'm not telling you to eat it, but you know, they want, well, I was going to say Oreo cookies, but Oreo cookies are kosher now, but okay, whatever it would be. You know, something treif, buy some bacon, whatever. Now, here's the question. You're not going to eat the bacon, now they're not telling you to eat the bacon, but they like bacon. Am I allowed to buy the bacon? Interesting, Shiloh. One could say, I'm not allowed to buy the bacon because there is a prohibition in the Torah to cause another Jew to commit the sin. That's lifnei iver, lo site michshol. So when my parents tell me to buy non-kosher food that they're going to eat, even if I'm not transgressing the kashrus law, I'm transgressing causing another Jew to sin. So the short answer would be I wouldn't do it. On the other hand, it's very tricky. Because the Gemara says in Maseches Avodah Zarah that the prohibition of causing another Jew to sin is only if without you they wouldn't do the sin. But if I don't get the bacon, so Dad will get the bacon. Somebody will get the bacon, whatever it would be. So the argument is that it's not considered causing somebody to commit a sin unless they couldn't do it without your assistance. Again, I don't want to posit on this right now. If anyone has a particular show, we can talk about it privately. But all I'm saying is that it's simple to state you don't listen to your parents if they're telling you to do a sin. That's simple. But you need sometimes an in-depth analysis whether you're doing a sin by what they're requesting. And let me emphasize as well, no matter what they ask you to do, even when you decline, you must decline it with respect. Okay? You
still honor them, right?
You still must honor them, yeah.
So if you don't get it, isn't that honoring them?
That's true, but that's what I'm telling you, that kibud of the aim ceases to exist as a mitzvah when it contradicts another commandment. Yeah, you're not honoring them, but the Torah basically says the mitzvah doesn't apply under those circumstances. But you still have to decline respectfully. Okay, now, did you have a question?
Yeah, since owning the kosher food is the usher, what's the issue?
No, you're right. Owning it is not usher, but on the other hand, by bringing it into the house, you're giving him the ability to eat it. It's the eating that's the issue. I agree with you.
So is it directly facilitating someone else's avera, or giving them the tool with which they could commit the avera?
Yeah, well,
you don't know they're necessarily going to eat it. They could.
You're right. If you don't know, for example, they buy something they may give as a gift to a non-Jewish. You're right. If you don't know, you're correct. But let's say you do know. I mean, let's say you know that. You know, Mama's making bacon in the morning. Oh, we're out of bacon, you know. Moshe, go get bacon next time you go to bed. You know. I mean, sometimes you know. You have to be realistic. Sometimes you do know. Sometimes you don't know. You're right. If you don't know, you don't know. If they have, and again, it's interesting that if you have an intermarriage in family, you might assume, oh, it'll be the non-Jew that'll have the bacon, which is okay. Yeah.
Well, at that point, can you just say it's putting a stumbling block in front of them because you're always giving them the opportunity.
Yeah, that's true. But we're not quite that strict. I mean, you're adopting a very, very strict definition that just giving them the opportunity, there tends to be a requirement that it be pretty certain that they're going to sin. Now, you know, you're going beyond halacha, which is good. And the only thing is, when it conflicts with kibud av v'aim, it's not so sure that you should be strict, because when you're strict in one direction, you're lenient in the other direction. Okay. And by the way, this is a problem not only with kibud av v'aim. This is a problem if you're a, let's say you're a caretaker for an elderly person. You know, you're taking care of people. Or I'll give you other examples. Let's say you're a counselor. I don't know if any of you ever do this, but you might be a counselor in a camp, in a Jewish camp. And the Jewish camp might have kids who are not religious at all. And you have these cute little five-year-olds that bring all sorts of non-kosher snacks. And they say, can you open this for me? You know, they ask you to open their tray potato chips or whatever it is. Now, there are shadows. And you have to tell the kids sternly, can't do it. And the kid goes, cries to your supervisor, you didn't open my potato chips. You know, so all of these are, you know, you might lose your job or whatever it is. So these are issues. But again, as they say, you have to discuss it because there will often be a head trip. It's going to be done anyway, you know, et cetera. Okay. Now, let me mention that in this category, that you don't listen to parents if what they're telling you to do is to violating the Torah, there are three interesting cases that the poskim give that where this rule applies. One is Torah learning, because we see Torah learning is greater than honoring parents. And that means the following. Now again, Every case has to look at individually. But in theory, if you want to learn in yeshiva, you want to learn Torah, and mom and dad say, no, you got to go home, in theory, and I'm going to say in theory because there's going to be a lot of qualifications, you are permitted, halachically, to make the decision to learn, even over parental objection, because Talmud Torah overrides honoring parents. Now, not only is that going to be true when they want to take you out of yeshiva, but even if they want you to go to a different yeshiva, they think a certain yeshiva would be better for you, you are entitled, if you feel, talking to your rabbi, that this is a better place, whatever it is, to do this. Now, I say this in theory for the following reason. There are two considerations here. Number one, just because you're not obligated to listen to your parents doesn't mean you shouldn't listen to your parents. Number one, they might be right, and that's an important point. They may have judgment and experience. Mark Twain once said about his own parents, he said, when I was 17, I thought my parents were very foolish. When I was 21, I was amazed how smart they got in just 4 years. And the truth of the matter is that we often discover that our parents are very good judges. Now, again, this may depend. If they're not religious, they may not fully understand a given context and the like. But I do want to point out, when you hear the halacha that you don't have to listen to your parents, that is not the same thing as saying you shouldn't. That's all other issue. Number two, you have to consider many, many, many dynamics. It is absolutely essential for everybody to try to have as good a relationship with your family as you can. That's true for religious families, it's true for non-religious families, it's true for all families. That when you have a good relationship with your family, with your parents, who after all have done so much for virtually every child, then everything goes better. The learning goes better, your marriage goes better, your parenting will go better. So even if the halacha says that you can make this decision and kibud av v'aim is not a veto, one has to be very, very careful and reluctant to do anything that creates tension and antagonism. Sometimes that is unavoidable. Sometimes you've got to do the right thing, no matter what. But it's kind of a last resort, meaning to say it's very, very important. And keep in mind as well that bifrat, if your parents are not religious, the imperatives of Kiddush Hashem, sanctifying God's name, and not desecrating God's name, is a solemn obligation. You have to communicate that being a religious Jew and being a Ben Torah is a good thing. You have to convince them, you have to show them that it's a noble thing. And any behavior that Chas V'Shalom gives the impression of selfishness, of egotism, of a lack of concern, of a lack of caring for other people's feelings, is an awesome, awesome Chilul Hashem. So that's why you need to think about this very, very carefully and to consult with people. So on one hand, I can give you what is called the black letter halacha, that Talmud Torah is more important than Kibud Av V'Aim. That is true. That is true. But you need to balance it, because in the long run, if you destroy your relationship with your parents because you want to learn somewhere, it's likely you're not going to be able to learn that. Well, anyway, of course, that leads me to a final point that Poskim say. The Poskim say that although you have the right to decide where you want to learn over your parents' objections, they don't have to pay for any decision they disagree with. So in a sense, you'd be on your own. And that brings me to the second major exception, and a lot of what I said is exactly the same, and that is marriage partners. Talmud Torah is the first exception to Kibud Av V'Aim. The second exception is who you choose to marry. Every person wants their parents' blessing for who they marry. Right? I mean, obviously we want this. But, Haliba Diemis, if your parent, for example, says, wrong person, we don't want, and you are convinced after speaking with all the people you need to speak to that this is the right person, you are permitted. Now again, permitted. That doesn't mean it's advisable and doesn't mean it's good. But you are permitted to choose your marriage partner and your parents don't have the right to say no. Again, everything I said about Talmud Torah applies even more so here. That number one, anything your parents say should be taken very seriously and very respectfully. And number two, one should oppose a parental decision with extreme, extreme reluctance, and only in rare cases But ultimately, it is your life, and ultimately, it is your decision. And the halacha recognizes that there is no such thing as a parental veto on a choice of shidduch. That is case number two. And case number three is aliyah to Eretz Yisrael. And this is an issue that many people do face. And that is, you have parents in Chutz La'aretz, you want to come to Eretz Yisrael, parents would prefer that you stay in Chutz La'aretz, although Kibud Aviyem is a tremendous mitzvah, but Kibud Aviyem cannot override the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael. Now, once again, this depends on the circumstance. If the parents are old, if they're sick, if they need you, and no one else can do it, that's a very different situation than if they simply want you to be around, but there's no particular automatic need. And then you have to ask the question, you know, I have to tell you, again, I don't want to get into too many autobiographical details, but for example, I myself had a very, very difficult shaila for a lot of reasons about coming here. I've been here now for around 5 years, and not that long. For me personally, I'll tell you personally, by far, although there were many, many things that were difficult, but the issue was my mother was living in Maryland, and you know, I'm in Avelis, my mother, and the issue of leaving was very, very difficult. I would not have left on my own, but we asked Rav Chaim Kanevsky of Shiloh, about this. I felt that if I did not have a psak from a Gadol Hador, I would not come. I absolutely would not come. But he felt and he said that as long as, you know, he's being taken care of and you can have regular contact and you're able to travel, he felt that the mitzvah of Eretz Yisrael, of each of Eretz Yisrael and teaching Torah together would be more important. But again, nevertheless, a decision like this is not at all easy. It really is a very, very difficult decision. So you have to understand, and this is true in halacha, when the Torah gives you permission to make a decision, that doesn't make it easier, that makes it harder. In other words, if the halacha would be, keep it every aim, overrides everything, then it would be easy. I'm not going to go. If the halacha would be, Talmud Torah overrides everything, that would also be easy. I got to go. But precisely where the Torah says your parents can't make you stay, so then it becomes a decision you have to make. So for keret, right? You understand that? In other words, a decision which halacha says you can do this or that is a much, much harder life decision than a decision that says you've got to do A or B. And that's where this falls in. So the three areas of the poskim in which they say that it is your decision, essentially, your decision as opposed to telling you what you have to do, is Talmud Torah, Kibud Aviyem, and Shiduchim. Right? These are the areas where the poskim say, ultimately, you must make your own decision, because halacha does not allow your parents to put a veto on it. Yeah.
What if one parent wants to do one thing and one parent wants to do another?
Yeah, that's an interesting thing. So we have a very interesting halacha. The Gemara in Kedushin says that father and mother are in contradiction. You listen to the father, but that's only if they're still married. If parents are divorced, they're both equal, and you flip a coin at that point. In other words, the rule that the mother must be subordinate to the father is when there's an ongoing marriage. Once they're divorced, as a result, they're considered to be equal. Now, again, though, this gets us into all sorts of problems. I mean, you think about this. Let's imagine, and I don't know if any of you, well, okay, you're not married yet, so you haven't faced this, but I'll give you some scenarios, which are really nightmare scenarios, where the halacha of Kibud Aviyem is quite complicated. Father and mother are divorced. Okay? Child is getting married. Father says to child, maybe father got married to somebody else. Father says to child, if your mother comes to the wedding, I'm not going to pay for it. Okay? Or the other way around. Mother says to child, I don't want your father's new wife to be at the wedding. Okay? So you're a kid. I mean, you're getting married, so you're more than a kid, but you're getting married. You know, you have, let's say, mom is yelling at you that she doesn't want dad's new wife to be at the wedding. Dad is telling you, I'm not going to pay for this wedding if your mother shows up. What do you do? Who do you respect? Now, Kibud Aviyem doesn't help you very much here, because halacha says when the parents are divorced, they're both equal. So on one hand, Mom's desire is something you have to obey, and dad's desire, right? So what do you do? So really, I mean, as you might expect, what you do, I mean, you may not have the power always, but if you have the power to effect something, is you have the right to assess what is the more reasonable request. And quite logically, to deprive a mother from going to the wedding of a child is much more painful than to deprive a recently married new wife who didn't even raise the child of going, right? So in such a situation, it would appear that mother has the better argument, right? In other words, dad's request is not reasonable. Dad's request is not fair. Dad's request that mom can't go to the wedding is not a moral request. It's an immoral request. Like, one might even argue that that itself violates the Torah. The only thing is, what's going to happen if dad doesn't pay for the wedding? I mean, the Maisa, you're still going to be out of the money. So what can I tell you to do? Someone is saying, in such a case, you can listen to dad because it says, Kibud Aviyam doesn't require you to spend money. So the main, if you're going to lose the money, so that would be a shot. These are hard questions. I mean, the short answer is, when people behave in a bad, selfish way, there's not always a lot you can do about it, right? Halachically, you know, you want to keep halacha, and you're confronted with this type of behavior. The truth of the matter is, in an ultimate sense, basically, mom should be able to come, obviously, and dad's wife should be able to come as well. I mean, you make shalom, you swallow it, life goes on. These are things that happen. And, you know, in a perfect world, this wouldn't happen, but the second best in an imperfect world is that everybody shows up and nobody fights. In the real world, things don't happen this way, and then you get all sorts of very, very nasty shilas. But be it as it may, these are things to think about in the union of Kibud Aviyam, and I just want to be madgish that on one hand, it is absolutely true that Kibud Aviyam can never, never, never justify doing aveiros. That's true. On the other hand, you need to know what is an aveira, and sometimes a given request may not be the best thing in the world, but it may be a permissible type of thing, and therefore one needs to always discuss this. You can't just be strict, yeah, because if you're strict in what is an aveira, you're being makel in the mitzvah of kibud aviyam, and you have to be careful not to do that. But the connection to the parsha is simply this, and I'll reconstruct the chronology in more detail. That is, since Yaakov is punished for the 22 years, he was not with Yitzchak. But he is not punished for the 14 years he was learning in yeshiva. We see that the Talmud Torah is greater than the mitzvah of Kibud Aviyam. That's the yisod of the Gemara Megillah. I'm sorry, was there one more question? I have to go to my other. You had your, okay. Okay, so we'll see you tomorrow and be back.